This is Masters of Dispute Resolution on PodClips. Masters of Dispute Resolution is designed to provide those involved in the mediation process with the views of the most experienced and accomplished mediators and others experienced in the process. Through our discussions, you will gain insight into how to address and overcome difficult issues and achieve more satisfying results in mediation. Your host is Len Levy, mediator and arbitrator with ADR Services, Inc., a leading alternative dispute resolution provider. Lynn litigated complex cases for more than 30 years and has been a mediator since 1998 and is a member of the National Academy of Distinguished Neutrals. He has been recognized as a super lawyer in alternative dispute resolution each year since 2014. And now your host, Lynn Levy.
Well, thank you, Daryl. Welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining us for Season 4 of Masters of Dispute Resolution, a podcast which will add tools to your mediation toolbox. We're brought to you by the National Academy of Distinguished Neutrals and ADR Services, Inc. In each podcast episode, you are going to hear a story about a conflict, the impact that conflict had on the lives of the parties involved, how resolution was reached, and lessons to be taken from that conflict and its resolution. So, many of the details of the story you are about to hear have been modified to preserve the confidentiality of mediation while also conveying the essence of the conflict and its resolution. Now, today, we are going to be joined by a friend of mine from ADR Services, Steve Sapassi. And Steve is... I've gotten to know him in the past few months and always enjoy our conversations. And Steve has over 25 years experience as a litigator, and but he's also a highly accomplished mediator and has dealt with a range of cases, including personal injury, school liability, real estate, landlord-tenant, commercial, and insurance cases. And Steve has a very unique background for a mediator, and it gives him a lot of perspective on those cases that he mediates. Among other things I learned about Steve, Steve is by profession originally an engineer. He went to the University of Missouri and obtained a doctorate level degree in engineering from University of Southern California. And he has worked for Rockwell in the space division as a software engineer and ran a successful mortgage company. Steve is the Renaissance guy. I'm picking that up. Steve's the Renaissance guy, and he's going to join us today to talk about a case that he mediated that is I think you're going to find fascinating. Steve, welcome to Masters of Dispute Resolution. How are you doing this morning?
Well, hello, Len. Thank you so much for that wonderful introduction. I really appreciate that. Again, nice being here with you and having a talk. I always enjoy our talks. You and I somehow have this, I don't know what to call it, but there's some kind of a synchronization or something. We just, you know, kind of get into the same things in our minds and talk about it together, which is great.
Right.
So anyway, I appreciate being here with you having me here.
Well, thank you. We're lucky to have you. And today you're going to be talking about a case of child sexual abuse that was brought by an adult male in his 50s for sexual abuse he had suffered at the hands of a school principal. It's not the usual fare of cases that we get as mediators. Steve, why don't we just hear about the case? What happened?
Sure. You're absolutely correct. I was actually, when I was contacted for this case and then I learned about the facts, I was as shocked as you might have been, because, as you said, this is not the kind of case that, you know, we're used to when we hear about child sexual abuse cases from schools. Usually we're dealing with minors, and at the time of the claim, the claimant is still a minor. So there's a difference in dealing with that situation than it is with somebody who brings a case as an adult. And we'll talk about that. But basically, let me just tell you the story. And most of the story that I'll be telling you, comes from the plaintiff's allegations, or the claimant's allegations, I should say. Imagine a 14-year-old boy who emigrates to this country with his family, totally unfamiliar with the system here, unfamiliar with the school system especially. Because of his age, he's enrolled in high school at some school district, and tries to fit in. However, he struggles. He struggles because of his limited abilities with the English language. He cannot understand the lessons and the lesson plans. He cannot get along with the other students because he cannot communicate with them properly. And this struggle by this, I guess, child, a 14-year-old child, continues to the point where they determined that he should probably enroll in ESL classes, English as a second language classes, and be transferred to the school's evening program. Now, amazingly enough, I didn't know that at that time they had evening high schools, but they did. So they transferred him to that school as a 15-year-old, and his struggles still continue. He's still having issues. So at one time, he gets into a fight with another student, and he's sent to the principal's office. And this is where he meets the principal for the first time, who, according to the claimant, is a very attractive woman and a provocative dresser. when you hear these things, you're like, wow, you know, the things that hit a person at that age, the significance of certain things that, you know, hit a person at that age is very interesting. Eventually, these visits to the principal's office become more frequent. The principal apparently takes a liking to this person, to this, you know, student, and brings him into the office more and more to talk to him and try to guide him through the school and his English abilities and so on and so forth. Eventually, according to the claimant, these visits take on a physical aspect. She gets closer and closer to him, and, you know, they start touching each other's hands, arms, whatever, and things go from there. Things, you know, eventually go to a direction that we'd like to see not go to that direction, actually. So at one time, this principal offers to take the student home, drive him home, because somehow he didn't have a ride or something had happened, and she takes him home. And on the way home, she begins to caress his legs and, you know, what have you, and at one point stops away from his home, and they start to make out. And so, you know, a 15-year-old in this situation with what, you know, he called a very attractive woman, provocative dresser, these escapades continue. So she begins to actually drive him home pretty much every day and parks a few blocks away from home, and they get into this, you know, making out episodes. And because of this, the student begins to violate his curfew that his dad had set, to the point that eventually the dad gets so angry that one time when he, you know, walks out of the car and makes his way home, the dad actually decides to kick him out of the house. He says, "You're no longer welcome here. You're not my son. You're not doing what I want you to do. You're not doing good at school. And you're not even observing your curfew." So he gets kicked out of the house at 15, 16 years old. He has nowhere to go, goes back to the car, tells the principal that he's just been kicked out. And so what does the principal do? Says, "No problem. You can live with me." And takes him home. Is this getting interesting?
Oh, it passed interesting about a few minutes ago.
Anyway, so they begin to live with each other. And so when they're there the first night, the principal decides that she wants to take it a step further. And so the kissing actually goes towards having sexual intercourse with this 16-year-old. And then this becomes a regular activity. They, you know, they live together and this is what they do. And things continue. You know, he's kicked out of the house, no contact with his family. He is, you know, completely at the mercy of this principal living with her. And so this relationship continues. And he comes to school with this principal and goes home with this principal. Anyway, so let me continue this after the break.
Okay, we are going to take a break. You're listening to Masters of Dispute Resolution. I'm Len Levy, and I'm chatting with Steve Sapasi.
Masters of Dispute Resolution would like to thank ADR Services Incorporated, your partner in resolution, and its founder, Lucy Barron, for supporting this podcast. ADR Services is one of the leading providers of alternative dispute resolution in California. Leveraging technology to drive resolution, ADR Services is committed to dynamism in the face of growing client need and an ever-evolving legal climate. Now operating offices in all major legal markets of California, ADR Services provides unparalleled in-person and remote resolution services through its exclusive panel, comprised of more than 130 of the most distinguished and talented neutrals across the state, capable of handling challenging and complex mediations, arbitration, and other procedures in every field of law. When you seek the services of a neutral and you want results and satisfied clients, contact ADR Services, www.adrservices.com.
Welcome back to Masters of Dispute Resolution. I'm Len Levy, and our guest today is Steve Sapasi, who is conveying a story about a principal and a student, a 16-year, starting at 15, 16-year-old student who got in an inappropriate relationship many, many years before Steve got involved with trying to resolve the conflict that arose. So, Steve, you've told us, okay, they had an inappropriate relationship. He's moved in with the principal. This is in approximately what year are we talking about as far as when this happened?
This is early 80s. So late 70s, early 80s is when this is all happening. Now, go ahead. I'm sorry.
The dispute, the dispute that you got involved in, didn't arise until much later than that. And can you get into why that's the case?
Exactly, and that's what's very interesting is that, as you said, you know, these things happened almost, you know, over 40 years ago. And now here we are with this claim, and I guess what revived the claim was the 2019 law that extended the statute of limitations for victims of child sexual abuse. At that time, I think the law gave them the time until the victim is 40 years old or 5 years after discovery that the abuse had caused the psychological damage. So I think that's what revived this claim for this individual. And what really, what this individual was attesting to in his, in the mediation to me, was that what brought him to this point of bringing the claim now was when he took his five-year-old child to school and attended a talk by the principal of his daughter's school about child safety and what the school does to protect the kids and so on and so forth. All the things that you and I are now familiar with, and essentially society is familiar with, that, you know, at school we expect the child to be, you know, protected and held safe. So he said that that really triggered him and just thought of what had happened to him and didn't want to see something like that happen to his five-year-old daughter. And so he consulted attorneys and realized that, you know, he really had a case and decided to bring the claim. Another aspect of this thing, which is interesting, is that, you know, it's the change in the cultural norms. You know, back then, for a 16-year-old boy being involved in a sexual relationship with his quote unquote pretty principal would have been a bragging right, you know, with his buddies and stuff. But now, you know, we all know that that's just wrong, and we don't tolerate that. And so this is what brought this whole claim about. It was just change in norms, the trigger in his mind with his child, and obviously the law having changed. So
let me interject something here. How was it affecting him? Because look, I will say that's in the child molestation cases that I have mediated, you typically will see that a child, a victim of molestation, is going to be suffering from things such as drug addiction or alcoholism or inability to have relationships or job issues, etc. This sounds like a very highly functioning individual. So what was he claiming as his damages?
Well, that's very interesting that you bring up. Let me step back and say that the allegations, if I can go back to some of the facts that were alleged by the claimant, were that this relationship eventually got to a point where this principal would sneak him into dance clubs and places where alcohol was served. And he was introduced to alcohol and eventually to harder drugs. And so he became addicted for some time. And that continued until at one point he apparently got himself out of this relationship and began to, you know, clean himself up, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And to the school district's advantage, I suppose, in this case, was the fact that, as you said, there were no medical records or reports or bills. There were no records of therapy or anything like that. He had just dealt with this on his own. He had a, you know, broken relationship with his family, with his parents and siblings. But he apparently tried to clean himself up. So what he was alleging was how this had affected his relationships throughout his life, with his parents, with his siblings. He had an adult child, but then he had, that relationship had broken down, and now he was into a new relationship with a new five-year-old daughter. So his allegations had to do with how this had affected his life in general. Right. So what made it, again, you know, as far as, you know, balancing the facts on both sides, as we all do as mediators, for the school district, what was really tough, well, the advantage was that there were no objective damages. There were no, as I said, medical bills or therapy bills, nothing like that. On the other hand, though, here's something that really affected the school was that the principal has since passed. The principal had passed away many years ago. And so there was no access to this individual to ask her what had happened. And all the other witnesses had either passed on or moved away. And on top of that, this claim was so old that the school district could not locate the insurance policy that would have covered this claim or potentially would have covered this claim. So the school district was in a very, you know, strange position. But you're absolutely right. The allegations of damages were just his entire and the effect on his entire life, the way it affected him and the way he went through his life, having had this this thing in his life from a very early age, from 14, 15 years old. So, yes, you're right. It's very, very different from what you and I are used to, where when you're dealing with a child sexual abuse, mostly these days, you are dealing still with a minor. So the issue, you know, is fresh. You're dealing with a minor that you have to really handle very, very gently as you're, you know, going through the facts and trying to get the child to describe what had happened. But yes, we were dealing totally with a different situation.
Okay. And so but yet the traumas that we've seen in other child molestation cases actually did exist. So we are going to be getting into what the parties were trying to settle and how Steve helped them. This is Masters of Dispute Resolution. I'm Len Levy. We continue our conversation with Steve Sapossi. I just want to one quick observation. Steve mentioned that the societal norms back in the 80s were different. However, what this telling of this story is bringing home is whether the societal norms are different, the effect on these children as children creates a real trauma that they are going to have to live with regardless of societal norms.
No doubt. That's for sure.
Okay. So Steve, so the claim is brought, school district is defending, principal is dead. And what was the claimant seeking here?
Well, obviously at the end of the day, in most of these types of mediations, it's money. So he was seeking money. What was beginning to get old in their presentation on the claimant side was this repeating of how he had been triggered by the fact that he had taken his 5-year-old daughter to school and, you know, how for years he dealt with alcohol and drugs and so on and so forth. And I think that was mostly because of no medical records or objective records of any psychological or medical damage on this individual. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you and I get to those points sometimes where we see that, you know, the story that they're pushing is getting old. There's just not much there. And it's just an attempt to embellish the claim and try to make it as big as possible. And honestly, you know, perhaps that's a little bit of a takeaway, is that what troubled me was that the claimant's counsel was, or where there was two of them, where not trying to help the process of mediation and reach a settlement, it seemed to me that they were egging him on. And maybe that was the reason that he kept repeating himself with these allegations that, to my ears, as I said, were getting old in the hours that we spent together. So it's one of those things that you and I have developed or hope to develop this, if I can, with your permission, call it the BS meter, that, you know, we kind of begin to sense that there's more being shown than there really is, you know, or more is there's too much being presented. So anyway, so that to me was a little unusual. However, on the side of the school, they realized that they were in a tough position with no witnesses or evidence to go with, but they were also looking at the issue of no damages, essentially, no objective evidence of damages. And so it became an interesting negotiation. And it was, as you said, it was all about money. And right. We were trying to get to a point where everybody would say, okay, fine, this is a number that we can live with.
Very, very often, in child molestation cases, we have a sense of, can we do something to make this right? And usually coming up with the answer, no. So it becomes about money. But in this particular case, was there any, because this of what triggered the event, his protection of his 5-year-old daughter, was there any discussion whatsoever about what steps the school district can take to make sure this never happens again, that things of that nature?
Well, interesting enough, because these things had happened so long ago, the present status was never even brought up. Now the schools, you know, specifically this particular school district, has all kinds of policies and procedures in place to prevent these kinds of abuses. So, you know, back then, I guess they still had not developed policies and procedures at the school levels, and now they do. So what they were saying was, this doesn't fit in now. We have all kinds of, you know, roadblocks and situations where we can catch things. This is too old. We didn't have these things in place. So again, this made it even more interesting the way it was set up, that the school has been put in a position where it says, we can't even believe something like this happened. It will never happen under the current regime. But did it happen back then? We don't know. We're only listening to what this claimant is telling us.
You alluded to something that did the claimant come off as being genuine in his concerns, or did this provide you with a feeling that, wait a minute, you know, he's not all that damaged, but he's just trying to, or maybe his attorneys are, or how did that dynamic work?
Well, as I said, it did get to a point where I thought that the pushing of the issue was getting a little old to my ears. You know, when somebody keeps repeating some things that did not really objectively show that, yes, this person is really damaged, this thing really affected him, it then, you know, makes you wonder, what is this all about? What is he asking for? So, you know, and the interesting part was that, you know, you brought up the issue of, well, what about now? He did not bring up anything about what might be going on as far as policies and procedures, you know, at his daughter's school. He didn't even raise that. He apparently just assumed that the policies and procedures are in place based on the principal's talk that he had attended to prevent something like this. My BS meter was, you know, going towards the red, trying to figure out, fine, you know, we can't dismiss what happened based on his allegations. This was traumatic. This was serious. But, okay, how was he affected? And that's the part that I guess I was having a little struggle with, and the school district was having trouble with. They could not really get anything that would convince them that this person was badly damaged in his life. You know, they pointed, they had done some investigation where they had actually found out that there were some real estate transactions between the principal and him, and between him on that particular piece of real estate with his parents. And so some of his allegations of, oh, I can't maintain a relationship, I've lost my relationship with my parents and all of that, was becoming not exactly true. So, or coming across not exactly true. So it did cause some issues for me, for sure, and the school district.
Well, the presentation of and the arguing of the facts, did that in that mediation, did that primarily come from the attorneys, or did that primarily come from the individual claimant?
Well, the attorneys were obviously making the legal arguments, and you know, they had some, but the facts of the damages were coming from the claimant, and that was getting repetitive, and that's what was actually causing me concern.
Was there anything that the attorneys could have done? And we can cover this when we come back for our last segment. But the things that the attorneys and then could have done or might have done that would have made it more effective advocacy for his clients. That's what I want to cover, if we can, in our fourth segment. We are going to take a break now. I'm Len Levy, and I'm with Steve Sapasi on Masters of Dispute Resolution.
Masters of Dispute Resolution is sponsored by the National Academy of Distinguished Neutrals. NADN is the premier invitation-only association of civil mediators and arbitrators in the United States, with members in every state of the nation. Only experienced ADR professionals who are widely acceptable to local plaintiff and defense firms are invited to join the Academy's roster. The Academy's website, NADN.org, is the most widely visited neutrals database in the world today, with over 40,000 law offices, insurance companies, and corporations visiting our free website annually. Firms can search for neutrals by many criteria, including location, case expertise, qualifications, language skills, and most NADN members also publish their available dates, calendars, online, making NADN.org the go-to website for law firms wishing to schedule appointments online with their preferred mediators. For more information, please visit www.nadn.org today.
Welcome back to Masters of Dispute Resolution. I'm Len Levy. We're talking with Steve Sapasi about a child molestation dispute that ended up in mediation. And while we're on a break, we're talking about the question of whether the advocacy was appropriate here. And let me give you a little background as far as that question. What we're trying to do in mediation is to facilitate a discussion where one side is trying to convince the other side, not me, trying to convince the other side that they should move closer to their position in terms of their view of the case. And here we're talking about a lack of genuineness that, as you indicated, Steve, was picked up by the school district and may have been an impediment to obtaining more money from them. Was there anything that the attorneys for the claimant could have done to change that dynamic?
Well, that's a very good question. I guess our expectations from counsel in any mediation is that if you've come to mediation, you have the intention, or at least the good faith intention, of resolving the case. Otherwise, why are you here? Well, in this particular case, I guess, unfortunately, as I said earlier, they were egging the claimant on. In fact, they were not. I guess what I would have done as counsel is I would have pulled them aside and said, look, you know, here's what's going on. You're not a typical victim here. A typical victim in a child sexual abuse case, as we discussed, is a minor who's, suffered greatly. There is objective evidence of it. There is, therapy sessions and bills and witnesses who will come and say how this poor child is now behaving and so on and so forth. You're not the typical case. And that's another thing that was causing me a little issue here, is that it seemed like that claimant's counsel had not done their homework. The school district had more facts about his life than the claimant's counsel did. And so it was another disingenuous part of this, I thought, was the comparing of apples and oranges. They would bring up verdicts and settlements, or recent verdicts and settlements for child sexual abuse cases, and they were saying, look, the reason we're asking for this kind of money is this. And they would show me all these verdicts and settlements, and then I would have to say, look, again, you're not really comparing apples and oranges. I mean, you are comparing apples and oranges. You're not comparing apples and apples. So don't keep pushing these as your argument, because it's just not going to go very far. The school district is going to say exactly what I'm telling you, is that you're not comparing apples and apples. And that's exactly what was going on. The school district was willing to pay something. In fact, what really happened at the end was that I had to make a mediator's proposal where the school district had to take it back to their board. They had to get board approval for the proposal. And they were telling me that the board was very opposed to this claim. They just didn't like it at all. And I can understand why. 40 years later, here's this claim. Why didn't it come any sooner? But the school district, to their credit, agreed to my mediator's proposal. The claimant did not. And that really, really shocked me. However, later on, I kept with the parties for a couple of months. And after a couple of months, they did finally settle the case, thankfully. Somewhere north of what I had proposed, obviously, but not a whole lot, according to the parties. So, the genuineness and what the counsel could have done, they were all part of this, the dynamic of this mediation that made it very interesting.
Well, it sounds that one thing that was not taken into account really to the extent it should have been is that when you are counsel for a party and you are essentially asking the mediator, get me more money, advocate my position to them, to the other side, that there is a story to be told that has to be believable. And in order to make that believable, there cannot be a concealment of facts, especially facts that are readily obtainable. I think you mentioned something about there was a purchase of some real estate with the between the perpetrator principal and the claimant, and that. Did you say that the parents of the claimant were involved in the purchase of that real estate?
Well, the school was saying that their search of the title records showed that there had been multiple transactions on this piece of property, and at one time, the claimant had given shares to his parents in this piece of real estate. Mm-hmm. So the idea of, you know, this has totally affected my relationships and the way I approach relationships and the way I treat relationships, that it broke my relationship with my parents and my siblings, became a little less believable, because they're like, well, if that's the case, why is there this, why is there this transaction here? What's going on? So, and I don't really think that the claimant's counsel had really looked into that. It didn't seem like it was even on their radar. They were just pushing the idea that there was sexual abuse because he was a minor at the time. And because of that, he was affected. So he says, so pay us money. And so, you know, the school district was having an issue with that, and that's why the board was very opposed to this claim, although, as I said, they finally agreed to pay something to resolve this claim.
Now, when, you know, one of the other things that you've indicated is, and just indicated, is that the board, none of the board members were present at the mediation?
No.
Okay, so that creates a dynamic, because they are now going to have to, they're going to have to take the advocacy, or lack thereof, of the attorneys, giving you incomplete facts with which to argue questions arising. And so it sounds to me that one of the main takeaways here might be you need, as an attorney, to know where the warts are on your client's case and be prepared to deal with them when you're advocating for any client, not just in a child molestation case, but when you are doing so in this kind of context with an entity that has to have board approval, you know, whether it be a city council or whatever it is. It's even more important that you be genuine and that you prepare to discuss those things that you have to anticipate the other side will know.
Absolutely. Just like in any trial, you're always taught to not skip on the bad facts of your case. Bring it out. Address it. And right. And get it over with, so that you take the wind out of that argument from the opposite side. And that yeah. seemed to be a, you know, somewhat missing in my, you know, take on this case.
Hey, Steve, we are unfortunately out of time. I, again, thank you very, very much for this conversation, and I hope to have you back as a guest in the future. Thank you, Daryl Wayne, and my engineer and producer as well. I'm Len Levy, your host, and this is Masters of Dispute Resolution on podclips.io, powered by Infogen Labs. Steve, if people want to utilize your services as a mediator, what's the best way for them to get in contact with you?
Well, I'm with ADR Services, and the best way to contact my case manager, Ms. Evie Thorstens, is to call 310-201-0010. That's Evie Thorstens at 310-201-0010.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve. This is the end of our inaugural fourth season episode. And I thank you again, Steve, for being on this show. And to the audience, I hope you will continue to enjoy the stories we bring you. And until we meet again, stay well, keep listening, and remember, peace of mind is enhanced when conflicts are resolved.
If you wish to contact Len Levy, you can reach him through his email at lslevy@adrservices.com, through Len's website, lenlevymediate.com, telephone him at 818-903-5562, or contact his case manager at ADR Services, 213-683-1600.